Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Who's going to help Steph Curry put the necessary points up in order to win this game?
Clay's going to have to do them both ends. You're going
to have... It's not much to ask. Clay, you want a max deal. We're going to need 40 points, and you need to lock down Kawhi.
He's got to get. Well, 20 ain't going to do it.
You don't think?
No. If Klay Thompson only scores 20 and Steph gets his 30, they're not winning.
How many
game.
From the splash? Is this one of those games where you need 60 from the Splash Brothers? Is this a low Neal special?
Absolutely. I'm just telling you, three guys. I don't care how they get it done. Cousins and the Splash Brothers together, they have to combine for 78 at the minimum.
78. Not 75.
Boy, that's specific.
Not 80. And certainly.
Not 5, not 6, not 7.
Why is Boogie in there with the Splash Brothers? Is he your number 3 scorer right now?
Who else is? Is
it going to be such a big ask?
It is
such a big ask.
I know Draymond's going to get you this triple-double. He's going to probably get you 10 or 11.
Can't ask him to score 25.
No.
You got to put him on Siakam.
Exactly. You can't. And Siakam's going to get you 15. Guarantee. If his number's 12, I guarantee I'm playing the over. He's going to get you more. The guy was dismal last game. And Kevin Durant shook him up early. Played defense in his grill. And he turtled up.
Right up in that grill piece.
Got up in there. He's not going to go out and only get you. He's going to have you more than 12. Your freaking Marc Gasol's going to get you 10 to 12. And then you got freaking Ibaka is getting you 10.
They got six guys averaging double figures.
You got Fred on Fleek. You got to watch out for on Fleek.
So my point is, if those three guys, and this here's, hear me out. Just think if those two guys get 78. Let's just say that Green gets 12. 78, that takes it to what?
90. You're 90.
90. And let's say Iggy.
Pretty good situation so far.
Yeah, and let's say Iggy gets, say, 8 to 10. You're at between 98 to 100.
These are big ass, though. It's a big ass based on what we've seen.
And let's just say Cook gets you 6. But that takes you just to one. That takes you to 105. Okay, so is Sean gonna get you 4? Where is this coming? If those two, three guys don't get you freaking 78 at the, where is it coming from? I'm asking Green to do 12, which is a big ask. Maybe 10 is.
I think the way that this game has to be won is the same way that both the games you've won have been won, which is low scoring. So I don't think you need to get to 110. If Toronto gets to 110, you're in trouble. To your point, because you're asking for a lot out of a lot of different guys.
You are.
And I don't think you're going to get those games. If you get 75 or 78 from Boogie, Clay, and Steph, you're going to win the game, because I don't think that if Toronto gets to 110, I don't think you're going to get to 110. This game has to be won defensively, and it's going to have to be Iguodala on Kawhi as well as Clay. I know Iguodala's done well against him.
Here's the struggle with asking for a big defensive effort. Of the 16 teams in this postseason, the Warriors rank first in offensive efficiency. That's really good news, but a lot of that is factored in with Kevin Durant helping out against the Clippers and the Rockets. This team ranks 11th. Out of 16 in defensive efficiency. It's the worst they've ranked in any postseason under Steve Kerr. The last team to win the NBA title while ranking 10th or worst in defensive efficiency of the 16 teams in the playoffs was the 2000 Lakers. You have to go back almost 20 years to find a defense that performed this poorly against the rest of the playoff field that still went on to win the title. Now, a lot of guys hurt. There are obviously reasons for this. It's not to say it's a terrible defense, but it hasn't been playing well. So to Dibbs' point, if you're going to have to win this game playing defense, and the defense hasn't played very well, again, it's a tall order.
It's a big ask. And who's getting that? Who's getting that 11? You know, KD.
The KD 11?
You needed that 11. You needed every single point that he scored. Who's the guy that's going to give you that? Because I'm telling you, newsflash, if you think you're going to hold Toronto under 100, it's not going to happen. And that's the thing. And the Warriors, we've seen their ceiling hasn't been more than 108. So it's going to be tough.
Did you you mentioned Quinn Cook earlier? This kind of surfaced in an article yesterday. Zach Lowe had said he was going to write about it, but Quinn Cook didn't want him to. You know the bucket Jordan Bell got in that game, second half? He had that one bucket where Cook dished it to him and he flipped it up.
Yep.
On that play, Cook is bringing the ball up the court. Kerr is telling him to call timeout. He hears Kerr. He knows Kerr wants him to call timeout. He crosses midcourt, fake spikes the ball to try to convince the defense that he's calling timeout so that they'll lapse. Lowry recognizes it, presses up on Cook. Cook doesn't call the timeout, gets past him, gets to the baseline, gets under the basket, kicks it out to Bell. Bell makes the bucket. They wanted to call timeout because they wanted to get Steph back in the game. Steph is standing there looking to check in. He's looking at Kerr, and he's looking at Cook. You see him like, what the hell did this guy just do? They got the bucket, but Cook decided on his own he was going to ignore Kerr's request for the timeout and go with a fake spike and try to come away with a bucket. They got it, but the fake spike didn't work. Lowry pressed right up on him. Like, Cook was in a lot of trouble, and he still didn't call the timeout.
Wow.
He was hoping. I think Zach Lowe from ESPN was talking to him after the game about it, and he was going to include it in his column. And he mentioned something on Twitter about how Cook had told him he was hoping it wasn't going to, that no one was going to notice it, and Lowe was going to kind of let it go. And then someone highlighted it on the clip. They show Steph sitting there looking at Cook and then looking back at Kerr, like, what did this guy just do?
Good,
so they were able to survive it.
They needed that, too. They needed that, too.
Woo. Warrior playoff coverage on 95.7 The Game, presented by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. Quinn Cook's fake spike, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromise. Fremont Bank, they're never going to spike you. If you want Fremont Bank to call timeout, Fremont Bank's going to call timeout. Here's Anna with what's coming up on The Game.
All right, thanks, Joe. What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. It's the countdown to the final game at Oracle Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Warriors have a chance to tie the Raptors in the series tomorrow, and we are giving away a pair of tickets to that final game in Oakland. Here's how it works. We've announced the first Warrior player name this morning at 7:30. Then we'll give out additional player names today. Next one is at 11:30, then 2:30, then 5:30. We'll ask you for all four of those names tomorrow morning at 7:30. And remember, you need all four names to win. But coverage of Game 6 will start tomorrow with Warriors Live at 4:30 right here on 95.7 The Game. And we're still waiting on the results of Kevin Durant's MRI from his Achilles. Keep it locked on 95.7 The Game for the latest updates. Can this team push it to 7? Papa and Bonte will ask ESPN's Michael Wilbon at noon today. And head coach Steve Kerr will join the Damon Bruce Show at 5. But coming up, voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy, will join the show coming up at 8:30. I'm Anna Kagadakis on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Low and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Warrior Wednesday brought to you by our friends at Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. The great Tim Roy will join us on the Dial Pad guest line in about 12 minutes at 8:30. But we'd love to hear from you. Phone lines are open regarding Game 6. The number is 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. You can also hit us on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795 to discuss what you're about to hear. It's Steph Curry following Game 5. And whether or not the Warriors still have something left to prove.
I mean, we've made a lot of different statements over the course of these 5 years. And win or lose, I don't feel like we need to prove anything anymore. It's just about, can we get the job done or not? And obviously, like I said, tonight was an emotional roller coaster from start to finish. And we have another game to play on Thursday, so we'll be ready for it. But there's no more statements need to be made about who we are as a team and our heart and our competitiveness and whatnot. We want to win this championship. We're going to give everything we got, but I think we're done with, you know, proving people wrong or making bold statements with our play. People know who we are.
Completely agree if you are talking about the present and the current era in the NBA, because in the current NBA era, you are, without a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt, the best in the business. You're an all-timer. But if you want to be the all-timer of all timers, if you want to stack up against Showtime, if you want to stack up against Jordan, if you want to stack up against Boston, then you do have something to prove. Because this would be the ultimate nail in the coffin of so many trolls who have tried to say that this team does not stack up with those teams. Down 3-2, no Kevin Durant, everybody banged up, and most of the world picking against you is the opportunity to correct the wrong that is out there, that narrative that you don't belong in the MJ category. So I see what Steph's saying. He is smart. He's focused one game at a time. He's not necessarily worried about big picture legacy. He knows that if he puts in the work and he delivers the way he needs to deliver, the rest will follow. But if you are talking about stacking up all time, I do truly believe you've got something to prove here.
When you think about what Steph's meaning, I think he's trying to just like, hey, I got to take the pressure off my guys too. And he wants people to know, hey, look, this is, we have nothing to prove. We're going to go out and we want, do we want to win a championship? Do we want to prove we can win a championship? Absolutely. They want that. But I think his narrative is like, look, we're going to give you everything that we have. We're going to go out here and we're going to fight. You've seen that. We saw, we scratched, we crawled our way into this thing and we won it that other night. Now we're in a situation where, you know what? We're still determined. We're still going out here and able to try to change the narrative and win another title. But he's just coming from a place like, look, everyone's saying, are they the front runners? Can this team win? Is this a dynasty? And whatever. No matter what, win, lose, or draw, I think history is going to be kind. History's going to say, my God, that team, are they always going to be in a conversation? Was that arguably one of the greatest teams ever assembled? I think that it will be. Will it be the best? Probably not, because like you just said, when you're talking about Jordan and what the Showtime Lakers, because of the more consistency and won more titles, yeah, those teams will get the nod. But I'm going to tell you right now, Steph, what he's talking about, he's got nothing to prove. He doesn't in a sense, because I'm telling you, they will always be in that conversation. Will they be considered the greatest? Probably not, but they're always going to be in that conversation.
In the conversation, but they'll never be at the top of it, which is to his point about you have nothing to prove. Boston won 8 in a row, and they won 10 in 11 years. So unless you can win 9 in a row or win 11 in 13 years, you're not going to surpass them. Now, can you get into that echelon of teams that have won 3 in a row? That would be something that would be special. But to what Steph is saying about they have nothing left to, quote, prove, you could be chasing that legacy discussion, that legacy argument ad nauseum until the cows come home. You're still not going to catch Boston.
Well, help me out here. When you guys are saying that, and we talk about that, it's nothing to prove, but there's a guy who hasn't won as many titles, but he's still there's talking about him being the greatest of all time, LeBron James, but it always comes down to, well, he'll never surpass because of championship. But my same point that I'm making is he's still in that conversation, though he won't never be because, you know, Michael won more, all those different things, whoever, Kobe, whatever it may be. But LeBron's going to be in that conversation. Though this team maybe haven't won more than the Lakers and the Boston and what Magic and those guys did, the Lakers, old-time Lakers, and also what Jordan done, they'll still be in that conversation. But they won't be considered the greatest.
History is going to remember the team more fondly than the present does. And this is present company excluded, meaning Bay Area fans. Bay Area fans appreciate the team. But largely you get, I don't want to see the Warriors anymore. It's boring. The Warriors broke basketball. The Warriors are unfair. And living in the moment, people are consistently trying to cut it down. You will look back on this historically, the people who don't appreciate it as much, and then there will be this awakening, this enlightenment where you say to yourself, oh my God, that team was way better. Here are the reasons why. First, they don't get nearly enough credit for having completely changed the way the game is played. They're not just winning the game, right? There are teams that go out there and win by just being a great team. When the Astros won the World Series, kind of gave some validity to tanking. Because that's what they had been doing for a few years. Kind of got people thinking there may be a new way of doing things. When Boston won last year, there was nothing transformative about that. The Red Sox winning the World Series didn't change baseball. It's a team that spent a ton of money on players, drafted well, built up a great team, and then went out and just beat everybody. That's what the Red Sox did. No one's going to look back historically and say, that Red Sox team, boy, did they change the game. This team will be viewed that way. Whether they win this year or not, the amount of championships they've collected and what they've forced the rest of the league to do is going to be part of the conversation. It's just not part of the conversation now. So it's going to get them into that rarefied air. Number two, you will appreciate the greatness once it's gone. Remember the post-MJ NBA? People weren't all that excited about it. You had Shaq and Kobe, which was kind of cool because the Lakers were solid. Kobe was popular, but he was just coming up. Shaq had that great personality, but like, what else was there? There was the rivalry with Chris Webber and the Kings. What was going on in the East, right? You had Iverson in the Sixers, but Iverson was always, that wasn't the image that the league wanted as the face of the NBA. It's why they changed the dress policy on the sidelines. They wanted it to be more family friendly. They didn't want moms seeing Iverson and Stephon Marbury as the face of the league. And I love both those guys. Don't get me wrong. It's not to disparage them, but the league knows there's a certain amount of PR that needs to come into play. They'd rather see guys in suits than they would in sweatpants and t-shirts. It just, David Stern did not view that as a good look.
And that was the time where they were cleaning up the game.
Yeah.
Guys coming off the bench were getting suspended. Van Gundy sweep the leg when he was held on. Malice in the Palace. You had all these things that, to your point, post Jordan, pre Kobe and Shaq in LA, it was a tough time where games were being won 74-68. It was an ugly NBA.
But like the Pistons won a couple titles. Yeah. That wasn't really a team a lot of people got behind because it wasn't exciting. Defense winning championships. Dwayne Wade was great, but the Spurs never swept the country. Like, there wasn't Spur fever. When the Cowboys are hot, the whole country's on the Cowboys. But or you hate the Cowboys. The Spurs were always, I don't like them. I don't dislike them. They're just really good fundamental players.
Help me out. Why then does everyone always, you never hear them say, Michael, if Michael Jordan is the man that everyone puts him up on, why is no one always talking about, oh, let's put the Laker team against that team? Why is everyone using the barometer of this Warrior team?
Because it's the current era. You take the current era and you apply it to the best from the past. It's like Brady was always going up, not against Manning necessarily, although he played him head-to-head. He was always going up against Montana's legacy. So
right.
We take the best of the current era and we apply it to what we think is the best of the previous era. There are the people that believe that, you know, Jordan isn't the greatest of all time. It depends on what you live through. Jordan, a lot of his Jordan produced the on-court production, but the shoes and everything that came with him. It was the first NBA player that got this incredible marketing push. Larry and Magic were there, but what happened with Jordan was completely different. See, Jordan changed the game because he made shoes something that mattered. LeBron changed the game because it was all about player movement. He showed you that you could be a brand, that you didn't need to be a part of a team. You could be the team. And then Steph and the Warriors came along and they showed you how to do it differently. They just started launching the three, and now everyone's chasing them down. That's what gives you the point in history. The championship's one thing, the ability to also look back and show that you left a mark on the game, not just from a wins perspective, but because you changed the way everyone else went about their business. Jordan changed the game because it was all about getting shoe deals and endorsements. LeBron changed the game because it was all about, hey, I don't need to spend my entire career with this team. I can talk to my friends and try to assemble a team where I enjoy playing with these guys, and I can also go out and win, and I can get my money that way. And then the Warriors came along and said, we're not going to play basketball like we did 15 years ago. You're going to start playing basketball this way. That's why history is going to remember them. Because about 5-6 years from now, you're going to be in an era where any of the Warriors that are still playing, they're not going to be in their prime. LeBron's probably going to be gone. Durant's probably going to be at the end of his career. And what are you going to be left with? Are you going to have a dynasty team? If you don't, all right, it's up for grabs. But who's going to be the face of the NBA? That's the beauty of LeBron James. You either hate him or you love him. There's no in between. He's like the Yankees. He's like the Patriots. He's like Alabama football. You either love them or you hate them. Even though Notre Dame never wins anymore, you hate Notre Dame or you love Notre Dame. It makes them an iconic brand. Once the Warrior dynasty ends and LeBron leaves as well, what are you left with? Like, Giannis is a great young player. Giannis ain't going to move the meter enough until he starts winning. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, Zion's coming in, which is interesting. Right. But the NBA's got a very delicate situation ahead of itself, which is why history is going to look back on the Warriors and say, you know what? Maybe we didn't appreciate it as much as we should have in the moment.
Right, and we were talking earlier about the guys who were active this year who would score more points than Kevin Durant so far, and they're all going to be gone in short order. It's LeBron, who he's got 3 to 5 years left. Dirk might be hanging it up. Carmelo is gone. Vince Carter is in his 40s playing out the string, and Dwayne Wade's going to retire. So you look at that next level of superstar, and you talk about guys like Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard, the only thing you've ever heard from him is his laugh. He's not a marquee superstar. Kemba Walker, Bradley Beal, John Wall, these are all guys who have yet to emerge, not only on the court as superstars, but in the media as well. You look at Steph Curry, he's a guy you know and a guy you've seen and you've heard from, but other than Steph and some guys in his era, what's the next era of superstar, what's it going to look like?
Like, who's buying a Kyrie jersey, right? 3-4 years ago, yeah.
Now it's like, man, he's an odd dude.
Yeah.
You
can
go team by team. Carl Anthony Towns is not exactly a
great marquee personality.
Victor Oladipo, you don't know what he sounds like.
Anthony Davis's rep
just took a
massive hit. Yeah. Massive hit. You could get behind AD, and now all of a sudden he's wearing the T-shirt about the that's all folks. Well, I don't dress myself.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
What?
That's odd.
I mean, you dress yourself. Go team by team. Your guy in Philadelphia, Joel Embiid, is a great personality. He's the kind of guy who could take that mantle of on-court superstar and off-court superstar. But
Dame
I think
Lillard, they're pushing a little bit now.
You're starting to see him more and more.
Again, he's in Portland. You know, the East Coast doesn't see him during the regular season. That's such a delicate dynamic. The NFL, you see all these guys at the same time every week. It's accessible.
Right.
Here they are at either 10 a.m. or 1 p.m., and then here they are at either 1 p.m. or 4 p.m. Then guess what? There's going to be an accessible Monday night game, which the world knows about, because we know Monday night football. We know Thursday night football. We know Sunday night football. What's the big NBA night? Like, there's not – you got to have a name for it. That's the thing. Remember when ESPN had Big Monday for college basketball? People make jokes about that stuff, but it matters because your mind remembers it. Monday night football, half the time people don't even know who's playing. But you know there's a game on Monday night.
But that's why also Adam Silver is now looking at potentially moving games back in the West Coast to 6 p.m. So that way you do get that East Coast audience because, wait for it, LeBron's in the West.
You can get a little bit more, yes, because that'll be starting at 9. But again, Wednesday night, Portland and the Clippers, how many kids in Jersey are going to be watching that game?
Exactly.
It's still challenging because it's like, all right, well, what night's that on? Like, you need, like, the big – you need, like, a name for it. That's the thing. That's – if they worked on that, you could end up making some of these guys more marketable. That's why the Zion thing troubles me because it's like, New Orleans, please build around him because if you don't, he just kind of struggles there. You're missing a great opportunity. We'll come back to all this. But right now, Tim Roy brought to you by Mancini's, simply the best night's sleep. Tim Roy, the voice of the Warriors, joining Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Tim, good morning and thank you for your time. We must have played your call at the end of Game 5 10, 20 times yesterday. You sound like the only guy in the building who's excited. It's like 20,000 people who can't figure out what just happened, and you. Did you feel as if you were going to be attacked being that loud and excited after that game?
No, I didn't. No, not at all. You know, it was just a great finish to a great basketball game. It was just unbelievable that I think it's one of the more iconic NBA Finals games that's ever been played. Just because of all the drama, what happened in there, the emotions and the swings of it all, it was an incredible, incredible night. It was such a bittersweet moment because the Warriors win, they get back to Oracle, and then you get to the post game show and you realize, Kevin is seriously hurt, and it's just too bad.
Where do you put the Kevin Durant comeback performance in the pantheon of great NBA Finals returns? We always talk about the Willis Reed game. He had 4 points in 28 minutes. We talk about the flu game and other great comeback stories in the NBA Finals. Even if the Warriors don't go on to win the title, Tim, where do you put that comeback from KD?
I think it's got to be up there with anybody. I mean, he hadn't played in a month and was out there trying to win for his teammates and to try get another title. That's what this is all about. Again, we lose focus sometimes on what it's about. It's about winning. It's about winning games. And so if the Warriors go on to win this, then it's going to go down. I think it's probably one of the most in one of the best examples of heart and being a teammate in sports history. Because if he's the catalyst for a 3-1 comeback, then that's a tremendous historical significance.
No question, Tim. I couldn't agree with you more. What does this say about Kevin Durant? Has it changed perception? You heard Bob Myers talk about he's the most different type of person, misunderstood people, but people don't know him. Has this, you see this guy go out there and which, risk, his career, put it on the line because you talked about this for the win. What does this say about just him as a person, as a player?
Yeah, I just think it just shows who he is. It shows that he is a great teammate, that he is a guy that's interested in winning, and it's not just about, his contract or his dollar value. It's about winning. It's about getting out there and putting it on the line for the for the other guys. And, you know, and I just think it just shows how much he loves to play. He is, you know, I use the word, you know, maniacal about his development, and he is. He's just relentless with his pursuit of perfection. And, you know, if anybody can come back from this and get close to where, you know, they were before, I think it's going to be Kevin Durant, because he is so driven to be a great player. And so, you know, I think it's changed a little bit of the narrative around him. And I think anybody that questions who he is and what he's all about now is just being, you know, snarky and being mean, because I think he showed us all, you know, exactly what, you know, he's made of with what he was trying to do there.
Tim Roy, the voice of the Golden State Warriors, with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game, appearing via the dial pad guest line. Obviously, you've got a headset on, you're in the moment, you're working, you're trying to take everything in and convey it to the audience at the same time. What is it like after the Durant injury when fans started cheering? We see it on TV, but sometimes it can be misleading. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion of this. You were in the building. Take us through that moment.
Well, it was shocking. And let me say this. There are knuckleheads in every fan base. Every fan base has a knucklehead somewhere, and a few, more than one, a few. I don't think it's reflective of their fan base, of the city, and of the country. It's a great place, and people are great there and friendly. But I was shocked. I was shocked. It was palatable. It was loud enough to where, you know, Serge Ibaka's out there trying to, you know, calm down. The public address announcer, Herbie's going shh on the PA, and Kyle Lowry's out there. So it was loud enough to where people on the floor were reacting in a horrified way. And I was really shocked by it. And I just couldn't believe that people were doing that. And I'm going to try to be on the side of, they got caught up in the moment, and, you know, they thought, oh, with him down, we're definitely going to win the title, you know, because they were ready for a coronation in game five. They were ready for that. And so I think they maybe just got caught up in a second, but it was just really disappointing and really, really, really shocking.
And they were hoping for a coronation, I'm sure, tomorrow night. They'll be crowded into Jurassic Park, hoping that the Raptors can pull it out. What does Golden State do to replicate what they did in Game 5, even though they don't have Kevin Durant? What's the blueprint, Tim, for the Warriors to shock Toronto again in Game 6?
I think they got to keep their turnovers to a dull roar. I think they need to get to the defensive glass and not give, you know, the Raptors, you know, we've seen it throughout the series where they get, you know, three and four, you know, chances at it on a single possession. I think those really sap your energy, because you're out there busting on defense for, you know, 40 seconds, 50 seconds. You know, and I think they need to find, you know, that third score. And maybe it's DeMarcus Cousins. Maybe, you know, he played so well in Game 5. It was really... And I think, again, another example of what this team is, you know, the intangibles on this team. Here's a guy that wasn't playing. You know, they started the Hampton Five. So, I think Steve Kerr was rolling dice. He was going to go small. But then the situation changes, and he goes down the bench, says, DeMarcus, you're in. And he responded in a big way. And so I think you're going to see, I think these last two games, it's going to be very similar in my mind to Game 6 in Houston, where I think it's going to be all hands on deck, and whatever combination works, it's going to stay out there for a while.
You're absolutely right. I think Cousins, you know, he's shown that he can give us flashes of greatness. He's going to have to play big. There's no question that he has to if they're going to keep this extended to Game 7. Let's go back to the point you talked about, the rebounding. Sometimes you're seeing Toronto get two and three more. I see effort. It's not lack of effort by the Warriors. You see those guys, they're fighting, they're contesting. But what is it in your opinion? Is it just Toronto's just the length? What is it in your opinion why they're dominating the boards and getting sexy on offense?
Well, I don't know if they're dominating the boards, but they're getting certain possessions. And I think part of it is that the Warriors are scrambling on the defensive end. And they're flying at shooters and trying to get – and that gets you out of position for rebounds. And so to me, it's not, you can live with a couple of those, but to me, it's the ones that should never happen. Rebound off a missed free throw. that kind of a thing. That should never happen. You should make sure you have all that. You know, unless they get a lucky bounce and it bounces, you know, over a guy's head and goes to a corner, then you should always get the defensive rebound on a free throw, in my opinion. But you know, I just think that they can make their lives a lot easier if they pay a little more attention to that. And I think their attention to details was good in Game 5. You didn't see Siakam get going. You didn't see Danny Green get going. And I think if they can do that, stay locked in on the details of playing this Raptors team, I think the deeper the series goes, you know, if they get into a Game 7 and it's a tight Game 7, I think that favors the Warriors because they've been there before. They understand the magnitude of the moment, and I don't think it will overwhelm them.
Tim Roy, the voice of the Warriors, joining Jolo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Not to put any pressure on you, but I'm sure you've thought about it.
Oh, no.
Tomorrow's the last night, last game ever in the history of Oracle Arena. You will be the voice of that moment. Have you thought about how you're going to handle the end of the game, whether it's a Warriors win or a Warrior loss?
Not until you just said it right now. Now I'm terrified.
It's a big moment.
Thank you so much for that. Yes, thank you so much for that.
You've thought about it. Come on.
Well, you know, you've always thought about, you know, the final moments at Oracle. To me, it was more, you know, I wanted to get some people down on paper that I wanted to make sure that I thank. That's to me was the most important thing, was making sure I get a couple of shout outs there when we sign off, that, you know, some people, to let them know how much we appreciate them and love them you know, so that's going to be a part of it. I haven't thought about it, to be honest with you, because I you know, we just got back yesterday, and you know, the process of getting ready for Game 6 starts as soon as I get off here. And I will say this, it's going to be a real special night for me, because Lee Jones will be there. This will be his final game. Our engineer, he's retiring, and he's been with us since probably the late 70s, I believe. And so, you know, he's been a Warrior guy through and through. Jim Barnett will be up there. We'll also have Jeff Chapman's going to fly in from Austin, Texas.
Wow.
He was my first statistician, and he's going to fly in for that game and do stats for me. And I'm really emotional about that. I think it's going to be wonderful. You know, of course, RC will be there, so it's going to be a great night. And I'm so glad, you know, the Warriors got back to Oracle. I'm so glad they got Game 6 back there.
Tim, I'm just hoping you can share a picture and share more memories of that, because I know how special it is to have Jeff Chapman come back. We lost his son Bo tragically earlier this year, and the great comments he made about Lee Jones, Lee J, the legend of more than five decades in this market as an engineer. So please take a lot of pictures and try to share as much of that memory as you can.
I will. I think we'll get some stuff tweeted out earlier before the game and see how that goes. It's going to be a great night. It's going to be a great night, and I think it's going to be a great game. I don't see a blowout from either team in these final two.
Class act, Tim. Class act indeed. We know you'll deliver. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Enjoy the moment tomorrow. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Guys, always fun to talk to you guys, and I think the NBA marketing is doing just fine. By the way, I think they're doing okay.
Leave that to us. We'll improve upon this. We'll improve upon it. That's what we do around these parts.
Adam Silver, line one.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, guys.
It's big tomorrow night.
Yeah,
that's big.
It really
to think
is.
About that moment. Your voice will be on that call. He's always handled all the moments in spectacular fashion. Listening to him at the end of Game 5, I still get chills because you hear this entire building gutted, and he's just there living it up. The Warriors have won. Go back to Oracle. Dust off the seats. One more game for the old barn. It's a fantastic line. If we have the call, we'll play it for you in a little bit. Let's go ahead and see if we can dig that up.
Yeah, his sign-off's going to have to be amazing. Just when you asked him that question, my mind was just so many thoughts that it's probably going through his mind is, we, you know, I'm signing off. It's going to be, the memories here will never be forgotten because the building is no longer. It's going to be I think it's going to be so poetic. I think that building has so many memories that we'd have to say that will never be forgotten, even though they're going to another spot.
I could see a situation in which he has something beautiful worked up and he's working his way through it, and you're on the call with him and you just jump in. Sure. And then for the rest of time, we have this. Sure. In a really odd place, as Tim Roy is saying goodbye to Oracle.
I don't know if it would be an odd place, but I'd make sure that sure.
It generally is.
I'd make sure that it would be just, it echo really nice. Sure. I'd make sure that it's there.
Yeah, you go ahead and lay out and let let Tim handle this one.
But that's not stepping on. Would that be considered stepping in
it's
your opinion?
100%
absolutely
stepping on.
Especially
every time
when
you look at
the situation of Tim Roy trying to close down a building, 47 years at Oracle, the retirement of Lee Jones, Jeff Chapman sitting in the spot that his late son used to sit in. The emotions are going to be unbelievably high for Tim Roy, especially if he has a chance to reflect on it. I just hope
sure.
he can get through it.
Like
it's beautiful.
That was perfect. Thank you. You see how you laid all that out? And I came in right at the perfect time.
I did enjoy it. John, San Francisco. John's been on hold for a while. John, we appreciate your patience. Welcome to the show. The floor is yours. Fire away.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Hey, I love you guys, Joe, Lo, but you guys are wrong. The Warriors are going to win game six, and I guarantee it. You know why?
Why?
Law of average. The law of average is on their side. They've already lost two games in Oregon. I get it. Toronto is good. They're a very good team, well built, you know, from top to bottom.
Sure.
But the Warriors, I said, they've already lost two games. They're not going to lose the third game, especially the last game at Oracle. Remember, this is the Warriors. Now, when it gets to game seven, I'm going to ask you guys, one game for all glory. You're going to take the Raptors over the Warriors? You know the Raptors? You know what they are? They're an extinct lizard. Go take the Raptors. Go ahead.
Appreciate the phone call. I don't want to fight or argue with anyone who's pro-Warrior. That's not what I'm trying to do. I would say that the law of averages, not on their side. Look at the three-point shooting. Law of averages very much on Toronto's side entering Game 5. But outside of that, I love the optimism because there's going to need to be a lot of that heading into tomorrow. You hope for a raucous crowd, but good raucous, obviously. I'm not talking about riot raucous, three people thrown out of Fenway last night. I'm not talking about that kind of raucous. I'm talking about just good, old-fashioned hostility to try to get Toronto rattled. Get a first-quarter lead, you don't know what can happen from there. But you're going to need a first-quarter lead. Playing from behind with a banged-up MASH unit and a short bench, tall order. Tall order. Now, we were talking about the great Tim Roy call from Game 5. Take a listen.
Van Vliet will take it up the floor. Van Vliet down to 12 seconds, 10 seconds. Waiting for Leonard. Leonard catches it on the logo, steps out. Guarded by Klay Thompson, 6 seconds with 5 seconds. Leonard right side stops, feeds Van Vliet. Van Vliet, one dribble, get the corner. Lowry is blocked by Draymond. The game's over! The game's over! The game is over! The Warriors have won! 106-105!
Listen to that. It's such a beautiful contrast. It's a black and white cookie. It's a black and white cookie. You've got this entire crowd just deflated. They were so happy when a guy got hurt early in that game. So happy that they were going to win the title at home. And then not only do they lose, do they blow it in spectacular fashion at the end, but you've got Roy there just delivering the moment in the most perfect possible way. There is no mistaking what happened at the end of that game. He did his job to perfection right there. To perfection, that moment was captured.
It was a great piece
of audio.
That was. Roy, he was on fire. I love the way that you hear his voice, just the calm and the excitement that he has. Takes you through all the experience. I can't wait for tomorrow night, Joe. I just think that you're going to see both teams just let it hang. They're going to let it hang. I think there's going to be a lot of fireworks. I think this is going to be the highest scoring game we had seen thus far.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. What has the Warriors got to lose? This is the one that you're not going to play tight. You're going to try to bring your defense, but you're going to say, we got to put it in. And I just think that they're going to score some points.
Is there a chance late in the game? Give me the odds on this. Maybe 6 minutes to go, and it's out of hand. The wrong way. Toronto looks like they're going to cruise in this one. Draymond picks up that technical.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a hypothetical? Yeah. Of course. I mean, that's of course.
Yeah.
I was waiting for the other shoe. Yes. The answer is yes.
Does he
Joe.
Get the payoff? Does he get to his 7 technicals just because he realizes that's it?
I think he might get the 2. He might get the uno, dos, adios. Honestly, I was thinking you're going to ask, does Steve Kerr pull out Curry? Does he pull out Klay Thompson for one more on-court farewell to give him an actual goodbye? But to your point, your question, if they're down 19 with 6 minutes to go, and Kawhi comes down, and Draymond does one of his plays where he jumps straight up, but they call the foul on him. He loses his cool. He gets 1, and then he gets 2, and then it's see you later. But I can see it playing out that way.
I think the Kerr, if the game looks out of control, I really believe he'll call timeout like you're saying, and he'll say, Dre, I'm going to pull you guys in a minute. Don't do it. I think someone's going to.
Dibbs just said that. Just said that's what he's going to do. If it's blown out, he probably pulls them out of the game so they get one last moment to wave.
No, but you're saying that, will Draymond get ran?
Yeah.
I'm saying
he's saying
won't.
Steve's going to pull him aside before that and say, I'm going to take you out. This. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Over under 1.5 technical fouls in this game on Golden State. Over, including the coaches.
On just Golden State.
Coaches and players, over under 1.5 techs over. In game 6.
Under. Under. I think the magnitude of the Durant situation, I think basketball and life have been put into perspective for this team coming off that injury. I think they're well aware of the fact that they might not win. It's not that they're going out there saying we're not going to win. They're obviously going into it trying to win, but I think they understand what they're up against. They realize how things can go, and the gravity of the Durant situation, the emotion of the Durant situation, I don't see anyone acting like fools in this next game. Especially Kerr. I don't see a situation where Kerr is going to yell and scream and pick up a technical. The only way it happens is one of those scenarios where the refs decide to just try to send a message early. Two guys might be barking at each other, and it's one of those, like we saw in the Clippers series.
Double technicals.
Double tech, and it's like, all right, what are you doing? Why are you handing these out?
Tight game.
There's no need to.
A tight game, I can see it happening. But
why would you lose your cool in a tight game?
I think it goes over also. I think Steve Kerr's due to get one.
I'm on
really?
The over.
Steve
I'm on
Kerr,
the over.
I think, last game probably should have thought about getting one to fire up the team. There's
on that Kawhi travel,
yes.
Which sparked that run?
He was going crazy on that one. I think Steve Kerr's got one last little flurry in him. And DeMarcus Cousins, he's overdue to get a tech. He was also frustrated in Game 5, so I would play the over on my own prop.
Every point, though,
over.
Counts. We saw this in the last game. If he got the tech, I mean, it was a one-point game.
I truly would like to believe what you're saying, that this is just going to be razor-thin margin for error. You just don't have it. You don't have it. I mean, Draymond got a tech in the last game. Kawhi knocked down the bucket. It was a one-point game. I mean, it was all right there.
Yeah.
Steve Fairfield. Steve, thank you for the phone call. Welcome to the show. Floor is yours. Fire away.
Thanks for taking my call. As far as the law of averages that you're talking about, take that and throw it completely out the window. As you get closer in final games, as you get deeper into the final games, as the games go on, people get tighter and tighter and tighter. We know that. The Warriors have the experience, and that's going to prevail. You got Steph Curry, who lives for these moments, loves it. Klay Thompson loves these moments. Andre Iguodala, look what he's done in the finals. They live for this stuff, and the Toronto is going to get tighter and tighter and tighter. There's no doubt about it. But, Joe, I expect no less from you. You did the same thing with Houston. And the thing is that it's over. The Warriors are going to win Game 6. And then you watch Toronto fold like a lawn chair in Game 7 when they really get tight. We've been there, done that, guys, and it's going to help us prevail.
Appreciate the phone call. I don't like just discounting thousands of years of mathematics by saying law of averages doesn't count, throw it out. No, sir, we will not. We will not throw mathematics out. But I also won't throw out the optimism. I will put this in play. Talking about the idea of the moment being too big for Toronto, puckering up, tightening up, those phrases keep coming up. Interesting, worth discussing. We saw them down 2-0 to Milwaukee, did we not? That was a tough spot there. We saw them in a Game 7 against Philadelphia. We saw them down 2-1 against Philadelphia. Obviously not of the magnitude like this, but they've been in the big spot, and they've handled it pretty well to date.
Yeah, I'd like to see what would have happened if the Kawhi shot bounced 5 times on the rim and didn't go in. Then we go to overtime, and we see how that plays out. Maybe they don't even advance.
I mean, God, Philly'd be winning the title.
The margin was really that razor thin for them in that series. And to your point about Milwaukee, they lost the first 2 games at Milwaukee, went home, and won the next 2 at home. So really it was not until they won at Game 5 that they faced true adversity in that series. And in this one, for the first time now, they're going to go on the road with an opportunity to clinch, knowing full well in the back of their mind that Toronto had a great chance to win. I didn't look at the exact win probability, up 6 with 3 minutes to go, but Lowe had the stat for us. Teams are 3-92 in the NBA Finals when they're down 6 with 3 minutes to go in the ballgame.
It's incredible to me. That's incredible that it's that bad.
Yeah,
and 3 minutes is a decent amount
and
of time.
6 points
you knock
is
down
nothing.
A three, right. Team misses the other way, you come back and you get to the line and knock down 1 of 2, suddenly it shrinks to 2, there's 2:40 remaining.
Toronto went 1 of 5 with a turnover over the final 3 minutes in that ballgame. So there's a certain amount of that, I think, that will still weigh on their mind. And again, the key for me through all of this is the first quarter and really the first half by proxy. The Warriors staying close, continuing to give themselves that self-belief, but more importantly, giving a fairly fickle crowd at Oracle that sense of belief, because this is not the 5 year ago crowd at Oracle where you would be cheering from start to finish no matter what. It's a different crowd.
They got
this crowd needs to see him in front, though. They've been into it, low, but when they've been behind in game
right.
three, the Warriors fell behind.
You're right.
The crowd was a non-factor.
But Friday, that place was rocking. That place was rocking, you know, at home.
Until.
You're right.
Until the fourth quarter, and then it was like the second book of the Bible.
Wow.
Exodus. Thank you.
And then comes Leviticus.
Shout out to the Pentateuch, which, of course, includes Deuteronomy and Numbers. But that's neither here nor there.
After Deuteronomy,
Joshua, Judges, Ruth, First and Second Samuel, First Kings, Second Kings, Second Chronicles,
Ezra, Nehemiah. Yep.
You're on it. I know. Shout out Sunday School.
I think that the caller has to realize.
Shout out Sunday School.
Really? Is it like me shouting out $4 gas?
They made me go every single Sunday.
That's good. That's good.
I think the
caller has to realize. I don't think either one of these teams, and I don't think either one of these teams are going to get too tight. I think this is going to be up and down. It's going to be played at a very frantic pace. Both these teams are going to they're going to let it hang on the line. My biggest question, and I think everyone as Warrior fans has to wonder, do they have enough? Is this Big John Tate and Michael Dokes are cried because I wanted Big John Tate to win? They used to go 15 rounds.
I cried.
Because I loved him. Big John Tate had him, Joe. He was winning every single round. The 15th round, he got knocked out. The Warriors, you see them. It's like, do they have enough? That's the question. Can they shoot with them? Absolutely. But do they have enough to finish? Every time, they're just holding on. It's like you just watch this Toronto. That's the biggest thing. Because Toronto's deeper, because Toronto has, they can play a little bit better defense, the Warriors seem like they're expending more energy. I just don't know if the Warriors have enough. I think they're going to let it hang. I think they're going to let it fly. I think that it's going to go over to 110 and to 210 that they have the over. But I just don't think they have enough. They're exhausted. Their bench has been shortened down. You look at the different rotations that Kerr is forced to throw out there to try to give these guys rest. I just don't think they have enough.
Based on the rosters as currently constructed, so you have to account for all injuries, if Toronto plays their best game tomorrow night and the Warriors play their best game tomorrow night, who wins?
Toronto.
What do you think?
The Warriors do. You're talking about their best game? That's 50 points from Steph, and that's 50 points from Klay. Warriors win if they play their best.
And when
have both those guys ever scored 50 points?
Steph did in Madison Square Garden. Klay had a 37-point quarter.
That's not 50. I'm saying when are
Klay, those? Klay had 60 in that game. So we're talking about playing their best. The question was put to me, if they play their best, who wins? My answer was the Golden State Warriors.
So if you're telling, so you're saying that that's playing, so you think two guys, have they ever played their best and two guys score 50 though?
I regret the question because I saw what happened. I regret the question. I do embrace the fact that the segment has reached its conclusion. So that's the key that we need to worry about right now. Good for us. Mark Spears on the latest with Kevin Durant. We still have not gotten an update on what's happening with Kevin Durant. He is in New York City. He is going to be undergoing an MRI. We're going to figure out what's going on there, what's going on with the future, what we should expect tomorrow night in Game 6. It's Joe Lo and Dibs. Back in a flash here on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.